Bandha
made use of it. Yes, that's what Bandha made use and others followed. But we did not in the early generation make use of this. Because we thought religion was something sacred. Now what is that race slave? The single race? The single race existed all these years. And the other majority also. What is there to is a single culture or single heritage? It existed all this time. I mean, this is the kind of, you see, emotional appeal which is utterly uncalled for in his age at this time. And mind you, none of these things will work at the next election. Because, as I always maintain, isms can work only once. Whether it's communism, capitalism, fascism, socialism, or even Buddhism, can work only once. After that, people will be a little more practical minded. Now the question will be, have you delivered the goods? Have you saved us from hunger? Do you give us food to eat? Do you give us clothing to cover our bare backs? Do you give us shelter over our heads? Do you give us jobs for our idle hands? Do you reduce the cost of living for us and enable us to take a little pay packet and deposit in savings bank? These are economic issues, are issues that matter now. How much you may try to distract the people from the economic issue, it will come back to it. And any government that will neglect it will pay the penalty for it, whatever the party may be.
47 to 56, don't you think the UNP misused the funds that they had and that they didn't spend enough on capital expansion and essential imports and things like that?
You see, I had myself, even with regard to a terrorism agricultural policy, to read my speech, I said that I have no objection to long-term plans, the Galloway and Mary and all these things. But it's equally important and even more important to restore this old tank and clear the alleys and devote more money and more labor and more energy in giving the small village cultivator a chance. And there are lots of neglected fields and properties that we could have worked with very much little expense. Economically, you know, the projects are not very economic, but you can't ignore them because that's for the future. But what will require a short-term and long-term policy, both. But I must say the short-term policy in the matter of agricultural needs, in that matter of alert and tanks and clearance and things like that, we have not done very much except during the wartime of the, you know, the committee. We should have continued that work. During the emergency period, we did tremendous, fine bit of work during the war.
Uh-huh. Was the local administration used for that?
No, we had to call the other committees, mm-hmm. set up for the purpose. And each member took charge. I was myself, for example, I know the amount of tanks and irrigation works and roads and things like that was done.
Since you were so closely connected with village committees, I would like to ask you something about those committees.
We didn't get a square deal, didn't get enough money. In fact, even Banda was too conservative. In the matter of providing money for work.
Not only works, I was thinking of the committees as administrative bodies, say, in the 30s and 40s.
Yeah.
Wasn't there a fair amount of corruption and mismanagement?
Yes, yes. There was, and I'll also say that we should have shown greater firmness in dealing with this. For political reasons, I think we are prepared to let so many people escape.
This is the executive committee?
Executive system. It's mostly due to the fact that the local government commission and the minister, the committee is only dealing with things that they come up.
Mm-hmm.
But before that, they do come up and they inquire.
Don't you feel that one of the troubles in village activity, take for example irrigation work, I feel that today much of the neglect and the fact that the tank goes to waste or the alley gets filled up is due to increase in indiscipline and procrastination.
No doubt about it. In fact, these are some of the things that I am rather worried about in the third generation. Now I always used to say nationalization cannot work in Ceylon as a program. For this reason, nationalization requires a very high degree of integrity and honesty on the part of the people themselves.
Yeah.
It's very high developed civic sense. It makes them feel that the property of the state is sacred. No property. Whereas your property are more sacred. It requires also a specialized knowledge of the subject concerned. It also means a good deal of waste of public money. And the running audits, supervisors, over supervisors, establishment charges. And the state being the best employer, being able to pay much more money for what could be done for less by others. May not be what that means. I mean, I don't think that people should be staff. But there is a tendency in this nationalized scheme for people to be very liberal and generous. As in the corporation, payment of huge thumping big things that nobody would do. See? Now, that is because, why? Because we have not developed that civic sense and sense of responsibility. Sometimes I ask by the question whether they are congenital disorders. They are not disorders. That way. I mean, they are just indifferent. We have developed that indifference. And as long as there is that indifferent attitude, you cannot go on. And I'm afraid that indifference can result also from frustration on the part of people. Sometimes people say, we work hard. I'm talking about the public service or the public worker, we work hard. What next? What do we get out of it? We don't get as much recognition as some of the relations and friends. So long as we have developed this clan and group mentality.
Helping the family.
We help in the family. Help in the family is gone to the utmost extreme. We see no virtue except in ourselves, in our group. So long as we are not prepared to break through this, there is bound to be difference on the part of the large section. But of course, that is where leadership is required.
Mm-hmm.
And leadership, and my experience is, if there is a correct leadership in the villages, then it's possible. Almost anything done.
Mm-hmm.
But they must be satisfied you are fair-minded. They must be satisfied you are impartial. They must be satisfied that you are prepared to set the example. But most of our leaders say, do as you say, not do as you do.
Do you think a fairly broad-based education is necessary?
Yes,
for this
village. It is. It is. This is one of the constraints. I don't think our education, I don't know what happened to education just now. There must be something wrong with education. Now, I had a list to you about central schools today. It did not come from me. I don't claim originality for it. We got Gordon Pierce, who was at one time principal of Mahindra College Board, who was education up in the state of Gwalior at York. As Assistant Secretary for Education, in order to work up the policy program. He was paid 1,500 rupees a month and he was in board and lodging at office. One day he asked me, and he said, Arvind, I'm going to give this up. I can't do this soul. I get only 300 rupees in Gwalior. I can't do this soulless work. What is it? Your education system seems to dependent on brick and mortar, but not on building a character. I can't be part of this system. I said, what exactly do you mean? Then he said, take that Kibbagamoor school in Sudan Kotalawali Directorate. 1 million rupees had been spent on it. And for 300 pupils. What? Other areas have similar palatial buildings. And for what? All around there, dirt, squalor, and misery. The people lead the most wretched, miserable life. Just about starvation. The sons come to this palatial building and they go back home, develop a contempt for their parents, develop a contempt for the village in which they live, develop a contempt for everything, and they want to get back to the town to be bus driver or do something or other. What's the idea of having a palatial building with that and fine bungalows for the themselves, the teachers, when all around the village is this, you must conform to them. You must try to show the villagers that you are just, that they are, you are just there. See, you are spending all your money and buildings, brick and mortar. And just take the Indian school. The primary school is made of mud, compressed mud. And that compressed mud will be put in 100 years, 50 or 50 years. Not a penny spent on it. The village supplies the labor. And the village teachers are formed by the government. And they send the best possible equipment. They are concerned about building a character. While you are concerned about fine palatial buildings and put wrong ideas into people's heads. You will never build character. This is what he said. And is there a way to be? See, we are not attaching enough important subjects we teach. What we teach, the apparatus, the methods of teaching. We are concerned all about the school building because it gives a certain amount of pleasure to the member of the council. They have put up this school. And the people there, great work done. You see, we attach more importance to the spectacular, the ostentatious thing. Our planning must be based on a different basis. With the village as a unit, the village as a unit. We consider Colombo to be a unit and the skyscraper to be a unit. A complete orientation required. If we make the village that much hold as a unit and try to make that a perfect place and have blueprint, not one, you can't have a blueprint for the whole of Jira. Try to examine as the AGAs of Jira did, the administrative report, examine the conditions of each area and built up. On that basis, probably we can have a country which is flourishing, but not from the... We start from the top to the bottom, not from the bottom to the top, right up, really. Now, the Kanai is very greatly struck by this. How we think in terms of the big and spectacular things. I was in the Maldives, I told you recently. They have 9 sailing vessels. 7 very big and spectacular. There they bring Maldive fish to us. They carry our produce. They bring rice for us from Rangoon. They carry our produce to Chittagong, another place. And one is operating even in the Persian Gulf. They make tremendous amount of profit, depart from profit. They are able to see that they can transport their food wherever they want. We have got a single coastline. Why? Because we think of big shipping lines. And around the world, that we don't do even our coastal shipping. We are not satisfied with small things. Or starting on small beginnings. That is our visiting city. And we also cater to the, people also like to be big and bigger. And we cater to it. Make them feel that you are big. Sometimes people like to say, we are the biggest people in the world, that we control the destiny of the world. That we in international life can lay down the law. There are lots of people who think so. It's an attitude of mind which has to change. And that can come from only correct leadership. Be prepared to work right down the village. From the village, I'm speaking from experience. Right down from the village to work. And the electorates are so small that anybody can devote his whole life into to be that. The present Gampal electorate is 1/5 of what it used to be mine. And yet I can't see anything done in the 15 years.
Yes. Yeah. Coming back to politics, since one of a few aspects were the 50s, I don't suppose you were here when the premier stakes
approach. No, I was here. I was here, but I know all about it. I'll tell you a funny story. Sir John was very disappointed. I got a telegram from Karachi. I was in Rome, by the way. The train was delayed in the airport for about 2 hours. Looking forward to meeting you. Telegram to me. So I went to the airport and there, the flowers and the decorations, the fine table.
Karachi or?
From Karachi, he had cabled to me to Rome. Oh. I was in Rome at the time. leader.
This is on his way to
on his
way. To you, sir. Yes.
Oh, I had a very big. I took my staff and everybody and gave a good lunch and fun thing. Looked after him very well. Then he told me, you know why I sent you a telegram? You are the only honest fellow. You always said you won't have, if you said publicly and privately, you won't have me as Prime Minister. All these other fellows took money from me, took gifts from me, got titles from me, got office from me, got everything from me and cut my throat. You are the only fellow. I won't have you publicly and privately. There's something good in that, sir. Then he told me a good description is to one of them. It will be a rival if I repeat. From the Prime Minister downwards to everybody. Then he said, you want to chuck up. I said, don't be a fool. Then you will be the loser if you chuck up. Because if you want to go out of office, nobody bothers him. Now, that was of course, I said, then also, what Prime Minister for you? Lionel, 3 months later he actually becomes Prime Minister. Bhatnagar comes shivering to me, who is the Secretary of War. So what's going to happen to you? What? Yes, I'm Prime Minister. Now what will he do? You remember what you said about Prime Minister in Britain? Why, yes, sir, all right. So I wrote a letter, my dear Lionel, and sort of, you know I always opposed to write through my life. But you would also concede that for ideological reasons are not possible. I always felt that you're a fascist after Mussolini. And you have now an opportunity of proving that you are a democrat. I see idealism as faith and the need for the honest for a practical man. That you're a practical man, nobody denies. See? I trust. That you go down to history, is a practical man doing his own thing.
What was your neighbor minister?
Very good minister. It is haunting, I say, the precious work. Then he wrote to me, my dear RSS, as for the past I have forgotten, I am now the Prime Minister of your country. I want your valuable cooperation in the field in which you excel yourself. I have you in view for Washington. It is amazing, isn't it? Then of course everybody is putting wires about Washington. One fine day, one of the judges Supreme Court now walked into Lionel's place. He said, well, I'm getting ready to go to dinner. Black car. What dinner? Washington dinner. It's all right. Washington dinner, but I've already made the appointment. Washington dinner, I've already made the appointment. So I can afford to go. He said, well, he's a joker like that, you see. But one thing I'll tell you, it was really for me, where I was concerned. I had the heartiest cooperation. With him, deliver the goods or you're not good. If you are able to deliver goods, he won't interfere with you. Good enough. I assure you, but for the latitude that Lionel gave me, Ceylon and this country would never have gotten the recognition. Because if I had to, at every turn to consult, you know, it's a quick change with the 24 hours, within 15 minutes, half an hour. Each man comes now. I went out of the way and told the American government that Ceylon would not touch the theater. Told them. I know what to say to it. But I said, take it from me, my views are the views of the government of Ceylon. Ceylon will not touch it. I don't know how to do it. It's too bad. I stand up for the admission of communist China. He has very strong views. You know, he
did.
Oh, Lionel used to have strong views about communism and what not. But he wouldn't interfere with me. He has never interfered with me, and he trusted a man, and he, the result was, we were able to give good service.
Don't you think that he concentrated too much on foreign glory?
I'll put it this way. He certainly wanted to be known in the rest of the world. I don't mind being a healthy too. This is one of the reasons that some people have. See, he liked it. But at the same time, it must be said D.S. was known only as a communist. He was not known elsewhere. Lionel made it for himself in the Asian region by the, say, the Colombo Power Conference, the Colombo Power Conference, and which gave to the Bandung Conference. He made his presence felt in the West. He went to Germany, here, there, France, and he went, of course. He came to USA, made some impression. At least, really, you know, Lionel is very well known in the Western world. So the first time a Prime Minister of Ceylon was known in the Western world. See? So this is how things changed. Banda came, he was already, you know, Ceylon was already known in these areas. But he made an impact on Eastern European world. So we completed the circle, that's all.
Mm-hmm. What about the Dudley's telegram to John asking him to resign? Perhaps he passed through Rome on the way. He flew back. Did he stop in Rome?
No. Oh. He went to Washington. Mm-hmm. And yes, there was at that time.
What about 56? You were not here, I suppose.
56?
The election time?
No.
I was wondering what induced Sir John to resign, to dissolve Parliament before the term was due to end.
Right?
Yes.
Yes, a good reason. He thought this Sinhala business will catch on.
Mm.
You know, he had made a rather unwise utterance.
In Jaffna.
In Jaffna. Where he was crowd king. This raised a storm. And he thought he'll make good by the colonization of Sinhalese business. And before this proceeded too far, he was kept on. He thought he might dissolve, and he was now in the height of his glory. But that glory was coming, he didn't know that that glory. And all the glory was in the outside world.
not
inside the law. You see, there again, power went into jail. He thought he was yogalanded everywhere. He was made a hero, pandoled everywhere. He had a lot of money, a lot of power, personality. And he didn't care two hoots about making blunt statements. He thought he could erase it. Particularly, although he meant to pinpoint that there is false nationalism in this country and making use of nationalism as a trade, he did not quite respect the feelings of people in the way he put things. Is it? That way. That's one reason. Another reason, I think he did not realize that it is a Buddhist country and an Oriental country. That you can't live above the people. The tower of good will intention you may be, that you cannot live a life that does not appeal to the ordinary man. So he is what you may call a fine sultan or sahib or maharaja or a Western potentate. But that's not the outlook of, that's not what people expect of a prime minister in Ceylon.
Could I jump back to
yes,
the 30s?
Yes.
The officers of state, I mean, they were opposed at the start. Isn't it correct to say that the politicians looked at the letter of the constitution rather than the practice and criticized the constitution by looking at its outward form?
That's my view too. That's my view too. As a matter of fact, the officers of state were very useful. I particularly remember this. How we had a lesson to learn. We arrived at certain decisions about the ministers. And we came to Parliament with those decisions. People attacked the poor chief secretary or the financial secretary. And he replied to it with the whole responsibility on himself. The tradition of the civil service, standing by. And in almost all those cases, they disagreed with it. Although they disagreed the board of ministers at every point, particular things, when they were attacked in Parliament, they defended the Board of Ministers and took upon themselves the responsibility. But that's a very fine thing, you don't get it now.
In your time, at this, say in the 30s and 40s, which of the civil servants struck you as outstanding?
Not among the civilians. Now, I must say, peace alone would conceal the criminal. Edmund Rodrigo, although he was sometimes a dictatorial for honesty and integrity, struck me as peace alone, senior, Edmund Rodrigo, and Lee Kumarasan was very good. And we had a lot of respect, I'm not saying because he's your father, but old T.W. and of the great for that, they were not administered, poor in judicial. That's why we stuck to the judicial side of it. And those civil servants of the bygone age, the judicial were seven men, although they were not what you call lawyers. But I must say we are very good for the civil
servants. What did you think of the institution as a whole, the civil service which was there in British times?
The civil service in British times is an excellent institution. They did excellent work. And they conformed to the traditions of the age. They entered into the spirit of things. And they certainly did not make themselves what they call a doorman. They had sufficient independence to say what they felt. As a matter of fact, under the Donohoe Constitution, the permanent secretaries had not done what was expected of them. The permanent secretaries are people...
Donohoe, officers of state or...?
I'm talking the permanent secretaries they appointed later in the Constitution. The permanent secretaries had the sole right to point out everything to the ministers. And set out their independent thinking and made their recommendations. Once the recommendation was made, the minister had the right to override him. And he carried out faithfully the policy that the minister adopted. But the permanent secretary tried to draw the line, find out in advance what the minister's right in order to survive.
This is the 1950s.
This is the last thing that was expected. In fact, if the constitution came to disrepute, if the service came to disrepute, is a civil servant, to be frank, I do not think any man of self-respect would want to be a civil servant now. It is because of these difficulties. Now, I will tell you, I'm not again by Sartre de Ven. When I was minister without portfolio and chief government, I went to DSNAC not once, three times, and told him, sir, I want to make a very important proposal. That is, to work out some guidelines, some kind of scheme, which will create a better understanding of the position, relationship between the minister and the permanent secretary and his department. Because there are bound to be clashes in the near future. One minister may think that he has nothing to do has to come. The whole of the work must be done by the permanent secretary. Another minister may say that he is responsible for the policy and administration both. Another minister may say that he is responsible entirely for the policy, but the administrator, the permanent secretary, must agree with him. And that's a thing that can happen. And the sooner we remedy it, the better it is. So enough headaches are with us. Just leave that alone, don't touch it. I went a second time to him. I told him, my God, he's a joint donor.
He didn't want to deal
with one. I went a third time and told him, may I make a practical suggestion? Please appoint a subcommittee with two of your trusted permanent secretaries, two of your trusted deputy departments. I shall myself be the chairman of that committee and some of the trustees. Because the time will come, and after all, good government depends on good administration. And if the administration is ineffective, or discouraged, disheartened or demoralized, there won't be good government. He didn't do it. Just as like the problem arose. They began to interfere in everything. Now the question is asked with regard to public service. Public service commission is the interviewer. That is for the chairman. I won't say that. The people who said they did not interfere came number one and two on the list of people who interfered. So, although they at the time, although the proclamation was made that ministers did not interfere, on Paget's report that they did interfere and the worst offenders to the people who pleaded innocence. It was not published. And there again, I found number of cases where it was 2-1. Paget held a very independent view. My own experience of things.
And the other two?
And the two held a different view.
Yeah.
And very often not right. So the Public Service Commission also became an ineffective organization. I am telling you to what extent we have prostituted this institution. As a result of, now they are not being clean politics in that way. See, the permanent secretaries have become useless rubber stamps, not meant to be the independent people carrying out policy. See that? They never give independent advice as a result.
Admittedly, most of the...
And political party, political influences are at work also. There is no denying some people are supposed to be pro-SLFP, some are supposed to be pro-NUNP, some people are marked for high office, so one thing or the other. But I don't know in public service why there should be one thing, pro-SLFP or pro-NUNP. Every public service has to carry out the public service, act according to public service regulation, that's all, and do an honest job for the country. But they are not doing it, I say that. And I say the Public Service Commission has also been reduced to nullity. And I now am strongly in favor of cutting it.
Going back to British Raj, that is the 30s, admittedly many of them were independent, but weren't some of them rather sticky and not cooperative?
Yes, that's also correct. They were very prim and some of them were very prim and proper, very sticky, and certainly unbending. Did not quite realize that they're dealing with human institutions. See? And human institutions require change in given circumstances. They stuck too much to the letter of the law and not to the spirit of it.
But weren't there some others who were prepared to take unorthodox...
There are others who were the other extreme also, unorthodox people too. There were...
Any that you can recall?
Now for instance, among the British
Airways. Yeah.
Among the British Airways.
Newnham.
Yes, Newnham was. Now they had a very sticky man called Davidson, for instance. Extremely careful. He didn't care to who for anybody. Did what was right. So I always used to tell C.L. Vikram Singh as meant to be an excellent number two man, not a number one man either. Dealing with very independent, fearless, good man. Lots of people like that. Lot of presidents were very good. Mm-hmm. Lot of armies were good too.
Yes.
One day I challenged him. I said, I'll tell you as man to man, you mentioned your best English civil servant, I'll give you the, our civil servants the same category. And I'll leave you to judge who's a better half.
Was there much friction between these three policemen and the ministers?
There was hardly any friction. There were disagreements, but to be frank, DS was even to bully them into agreement.
So that really they were not a block?
No, they never blocked anything. In fact, we were all effective in them. They were prepared to accommodate themselves.
But isn't it true that, say, people like Drayton and Nihil were more cooperative than, say, Tyrrell and
Wedderburn? Yes. That's perfectly true. Jason,
particularly, and I, yes, sir. What sort of
men? He was more cooperative than Alan Rose. But of course, I don't care. I don't attend. I don't think he's there.
What sort of governor was Tubbs?
He was belonged to the old school. Constitutional, prim and proper. Didn't quite understand the changes that have taken place.
I was surprised to send him because he took a leading part in the 1915.
But he was very prim and proper man. He didn't sort of not the kind of man who would do anything about Lankaya.
Caldicott?
Excellent. I don't think he's known about Caldicott. Caldicott was the one man who laid the foundation for all the independence of this country. Not only the country, but the itself. He's the one man who made the Europeans in this country feel that the Sudanese are good as themselves. He threw open Queen's House to Sudanese. He threw open all institutions to Sudanese.
Weren't they boycotted as a result? Mm-hmm. By Caldicott?
Yes, the European did that one time. But only for a while. Mm-hmm. He stuck his neck out for it. Excellent.
Was he deep? I mean, wasn't he more of the hair fellow well met?
He was a clever fellow. A very cultured man. You'd be surprised. I used to see Mr. Gatwara say this, Mr. Lawsley, public servants and things like that. He always, anyway, I asked an appointment, was only too glad to say, come right away now. He liked to have a conversation with me, and I went for 5 minutes and spent 3 hours at lunch or dinner, what do we see to eat? Because he wanted to speak about everything under the sun, caste, religion, philosophy, what not. Because he was out to get to know the facts about everything. And he was a very cultured man, extremely cultured man, because I discussed everything under the sun, you see. Extremely cultured man, a man of wide reading, wide culture. You know, we go to discuss any problem. The order is made in his own handwriting. The finest classical English. Pages and pages in it, wading to sometimes 5 or 6 much high. A very conscientious, hard-working, clear-minded.
At this point, the original spool was changed. The interview continues.
When the active minister of local administration came, Sripal Samarukar was contesting me. Could I have not questioned if everybody went round against me? But I was elected. And this is what Caldicott told, yes, himself is very clear. How is young RSS getting on? Oh, excellently. My cooperation, the best cooperation. I thought you made a mistake in not supporting your nephew. I hope when you come, when you become the chief minister of the country, you will entrust to him much greater responsibility. And Sir Wilfred Sawyer is alive now. Chokman is dead. Mark Khan is dead. I told a number of people, if Mel comes for anything in this country, young Gunawalan should be the Prime Minister of Sri Lanka.
And D.S. told his vote?
No. He was not told. D.S. was told that I should be given the most when he comes, the most spot. But he told this to Sir Wilfred, Mark Khan and Chokman.
Oh, I see.
At a dinner. He has tremendous high regard. I used to get in the committee sometimes. In the committee, when I disagree with Banda, what do you see the governor? As I am see the governor, I used to say quite boldly, the choice between you and me, I know. They all said, oh yes, Queen Charles. But the fact of the matter, he was a very cultured man. And he felt deeply that certain people in this country are not given the positions they are entitled to because of other concentration. And he tried his very best to prevent it, whether it is race or caste or clan. And every turn, socially, speaks of itself.
Don't you think this communal split has been basically a question of distrust?
What else? Nothing else? As old Kanakaratna member of Jatna used to say, the geographical and linguistic difference. Question of not people not coming together often enough. But I say more than that. They are also fanned by politicians for their own purposes.
But don't you think it was unwise for G.G. to put forward the 50-50 scheme?
Now I will tell you this. It was, well, I mean, you see that peace of mind on that sort of thing, but DSLV or I'm sending this role, but it is the perfect answer to it. I said I can forgive you for everything except drafting a constitution with the Governor General as a sentence for the ministers to dance round and round. Leave? I made a violent attack on Ponna and Ponna, they get too brutal and nearly broke my. Now, that was wrong. But at the same time, there was no denying that the minorities at that time were afraid that the majority would not give them a square deal. And it was the duty of the majority, which I always felt, to inspire confidence in the minority. It's a view that I will never change. If minorities are suspicious of us, we are ourselves to blame. Because we must inspire sufficient confidence in them. We must not only be fair, I always used to say these words, even be generous, not giving their confidence. See? Now, the Tamils made a mistake. 50-50 was not acceptable. It was a rotten scheme altogether.
Yeah, but you mentioned criticizing the constitution. That was Didi's idea.
Yes. Didi's idea, helped by the Europeans in the time to withdraw at that time. We had wanted an appointed committee with Bandar Chan to go into this question. And at that meeting, there are three of us who were left, Dia Jayavadana, PDS Gulavadana and myself, went the length of saying 56-44. I don't say in principle these proportions are correct. And you know it was acceptable to the vast majority of members. But Mahadeva was not smart enough, Nadesan was not smart enough, and the Tamil members said they must consult their constituency and their people before they agree to it. Or we had started the network.
But he was not on this.
No, he was not on the committee, he made a bundle chairman of the TV. He started working. And 56-44 went by the board. You all prepared to accept it. So there was no agreement possible. Well, this was not the first time when in the Congress we went, Banda, myself, Muttaya, Ratnamman, C. Korea, there. We went to Dr. E. Ratnam. We went to Jaffna and Goswami's house to bring about a settlement of the dispute, to bring the Tamils into the Congress. And we succeeded in a scheme. And that scheme was to put before the Congress. Francis Sousa exercised his power, the president ruled it out.
When was this?
The Kandy session. In point of fact, if it will win, it would have been passed by the Congress. We had the support. So, you know, there were people now, E.W. Pereira, D.S. and Francis Socha and people like that. They said, no, we have no question of proportion, no question of placating anybody. You know, the Westminster model, we get along that way.
Oh, I see. It is true that, was E.R. De Silva or T.R. De Silva?
E.R. De Silva.
Was he also
in? E.T. De Silva.
E.T. De Silva.
You were the man who inspired the younger people.
Didn't he support this sort of move?
Oh, yes.
And isn't it true that DSNM tried to get him defeated in Shillong?
That I don't know, but whatever it is, DS was not at all sympathetic to this kind of move at that time. DS and the Socha, E.W. Pereira, all three leaders during our time. So, duty that they would have been one to decide, at least to refer to DS. Well, I think history of Shillong would have been different if we managed to bring the Tamils into Congress at that time on that plan.
Who proposed it?
We had all the conference at Durasamy's house.
No, the idea of going there.
Where?
To Jaffna.
Sikorea.
Oh, actually.
Old Sikorea was the president, and we were enthusiastic young people, Banda and myself. At the time, to be frank, we were all toying with the idea of federal government also, earlier. Banda and I were people who toyed with the idea of federal government. You know, federal council with the low country, Kenyan country, and the Tamil country. And Sikorea was himself toying with the idea. That appealed to us as young people, but later we found it would work if too small a country. And we are not rendering a service to any of the communities we are thinking of. You see? So we abandoned that idea. Anyway, the non-cooperation between the Sinhalese and Tamils became an acute political matter. And then, later on, it became people tried to constitute an economic matter. Now, for instance, thinking in terms of percentage officers in the public service and so on and so forth. But as I said in the council, what do you expect the Tamils to do? Their main industry must be the government service. They have no rubber, they have no tea, they have no coconut, they have no commerce and trade. What do you expect them to do? They put up all the industries they have. Otherwise, they have got to study hard, complete in their nation. It's a lovely place. These are economic, all these are economic to a certain extent. All these, the Indian question, the Tamil question, all these questions are economic, in the sense that people are frustrated for lack of employment. You see that? And when people are not employed, they always employ the problem. We are denied so many places by these people. Places which we, the Sinhalese, might well have us. Positions which we might well have occupied. You know, it is just a doctrine of desperation.
Yeah, in fact, you mentioned the Indian immigration question. Did you address your mind to that at all in the State Council?
Yes. Mm-hmm. State Council. I don't mind saying this, but I held rather strong views in the other day. The I was given fundamentally young idealistic. And actually, I supported the National Congress that they should be given some equal rights.